The following program is rated M16+. Parental guidance recommended.
DRN1, supporting local artists from day one.
Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening to DRN1. Bounce Back is a fun talkback show where I get to have a chat with comical people. Today I have three comedians joining me and they are joining me because we've got a very special show coming up next week at the Chouse Hotel. It's an open mic stand-up for India Comedy Night and we're doing that to support India in their COVID crisis. So I have with me Jill the Scottish Terrier, Gemma Francis and David Horsty. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, I told you I'd stumble a little bit over that.
That's fine.
So, guys, I just wanted to ask, first of all, a few things, actually. What drew you to join this comedy event and how do you feel about standing up for India?
Look, I was watching TV one night and I saw a documentary on the issues facing India, especially medically and equipment wise, and they really are underfunded, and it just seemed an ongoing thing that's just going to escalate and getting worse. We've watched how COVID has escalated in places like the UK, which is where I'm from, and it's only going to get worse before it gets better. So it's a long haul ahead for India, and it occurred to me that India's not so far from where we are in Western Australia, and I visited India, travelled there when I was younger, and it was such a beautiful country full of amazing people, and it kind of broke my heart that a country with such a massive nation of kind, lovely people are having such a hard time. And as a comedian, we've got the opportunity to entertain people, and people are more likely to come out to something they'll find amusing. So I thought, we really should be doing something. It's not so far from us. Western Australia are living in this beautiful protected bubble, but, you know, it could be us just as easily. So I think we should help our neighbours.
Yeah, that's really important. And Gemma?
Yeah, I think we have just been very blessed with how our COVID situation has been managed, and we have the privilege of being able to go to events and go out and have a laugh and have a drink. And I think as a community, it's about using what our strengths are and helping other people. And I think Australians are very generous and helpful people anyway, so why not have a laugh doing it? And I think also I was dwelling on this question last night, and for me as a social worker and my other, my day job, these sorts of questions mull around in my mind. And I think the thing with the India COVID crisis and just the poverty that India faces every day is so huge and complex. But I think the main thing is just getting behind what we can and doing what we can with the resources we have. So I'm very excited to be a part of it and use my gifts and talents to help in a small way.
Yeah, thank you. And David?
Well, I think that we are so close, like Jill said, to India. And my family, my step family is Anglo-Indian. And it hits home when you know people, when there's families and friends that are being impacted and affected by COVID-19. We are so lucky here in WA that we haven't been affected by it thus far badly. And I've actually got a good family friend who's over there, and he's just saying how horrendous it is. The vaccines that they're getting are not the same as us. They're not getting AstraZeneca or Pfizer. They're getting these Russian and Chinese vaccines that aren't proven and haven't been tested properly. The oxygen and the medical facilities are just not keeping up with the population. And for me, I think that if I can give back using comedy, making people laugh, then I think that I'm going to take the opportunity to do that. So I'm so blessed and thankful to be able to share my gift and make money and hopefully save some lives.
That's really all of you. Thank you so much. I have to thank Jill and Sammy. I miss Sammy, actually. They actually approached NY Events to participate in this, and I love your passion for doing that. When I don't actually watch the news, I avoid it because it's, yeah, it can be quite negative. So I started researching this a little bit when Jill and Damia approached me. And basically, I was pretty shocked to see that in March, up until March, India was actually in a pretty good space with COVID. They had it relatively under control. It was there. And then there was a spike. And no one's really sure why that spike happened. I think there's many reasons. I have spoken to some of my friends in India as well, and, you know, just to get scope, one of them has had COVID. He has recovered from it. And another one of my friends said to me, you know, that the, on the ground, their belief is that they had the British strain come through, and, you know, it made me look into, well, how many variations are there of COVID? And there's literally hundreds at the moment. So we're knowing this as we knew the British strain because we got into a lockdown situation back in January. And recently we've had the Indian strain come in and we got into another lockdown situation here in WA. So with all these variations happening around the world, it just shows how fast this is, you know, out of control and impacting the lives of many people. So I did have a look today and I think there's something like 25 million people have been affected by COVID in India, and 21 million have recovered so far. So they've had, I think, 279,000 deaths, which is just incredible. And we really don't have scope of that. We don't have the population here to even, you know, understand that, do we, and grasp it. So I think when we've had COVID cases here, I've been one off about four people, one person removed from four different people who
there's,
have had
there's
it.
No people. I noticed there's an update saying there's nobody in hospital from COVID in Western Australia. And I thought, how many countries on earth can say that? It's just, it's incredible. You know, we just live in this. It's hard to communicate with people in other countries who really are suffering from COVID because we are just living in a different reality. You know, the rest of the world has this communal sort of understanding of what's happening in Western Australia. Well, not just Western Australia, mostly Australia, I suppose, and New Zealand. We're just in the, we, it's not the existence we've had. You know, we really are unscathed by this. I wonder how different it will be for us going forward, that we don't have that common understanding and the same. I mean, we feel empathy, but it's not really the same. So I wonder if we'll be different people coming out of this. You know, we'll be as unaffected as you can. I mean, but then we don't even know what's around the corner. We need to be careful, vigilant and mindful of what's happening in the world around us. And it's hard when you are so isolated over here. But
yeah, we've definitely had a bubble and it's a very protected bubble, actually. So
it could be the Truman Show. I have always had this theory that Western Australia is actually the Truman Show. And it's a construct from the tourist board of Bunbury to make us holiday there.
I think also the key is to get vaccinated. It is proven over in the UK that the vaccination program that they've had has reduced the amount of deaths. The other day, the UK had their first day without any COVID deaths. Although the vaccination doesn't protect you from COVID, it stops you from dying for it.
And that's so the thing.
We have the common flu, we have the common colds that do kill people, but a lot of us are immune, a lot of us are vaccinated. So I think the key here is to get vaccinated.
Polio and chickenpox and smallpox, we've been vaccinated against things like measles. All these things are being eradicated from society because of vaccination. So I've booked up for my vaccine in 2 weeks because I'm over 50. thank you. And I'm excited for it. I've scheduled a week off and I've told my family that I'll be doing nothing for that week. So if you're looking for a wee staycation, book in for your vaccine and you've got an excuse to do enough all for 2 weeks, for 2 days. I might extend it for an extra week though.
Why not?
So you have to get a booster after about, what, is it 6 weeks or 12 weeks or something?
I'm not sure.
Well.
The you couldn't book it when I booked the first part, but I looked at my diary and said when I had no comedy to do, because I thought, I don't imagine it's going to help my comedic performance having a COVID vaccine headache on stage. So I've scheduled the time off.
I'm a vaccine snob, actually. You know how people like coffee snobs?
I'm the same as you, Gemma. Same.
I'm like, I got Pfizer. Like, I'm better than you.
Well, I guess I'm sitting differently here. I have an aversion to vaccines until they've been out into the community, rolled out for a very long time. So for me, I think that we've been very lucky here and I like that we've been able to pause. But if I was in a situation like India, I would be trying to get everything, and I sort of think that would be amazing for countries that
you know
did
what
need
though?
It.
My parents, Yvonne, are in the UK and Scotland, and my dad's 80 and my mum's 76, and my dad has cancer, so he's quite ill anyway, and they have been housebound for a year. And even though my dad's pretty ill and has no tolerance really of much, they jumped at the opportunity to get the vaccine because having been stuck in a house, my mum and dad have been married for 60 years and they know each other pretty well. But after 60 years, being trapped in a house for a year, pretty much there's nothing else to say. And my mum has filled the year with baking and making soup. But there's a limit to how much soup two human beings can make. That's but funny. The point is that the vaccine to anybody, an 8-year-old man with bone cancer, terminal bone cancer, would be probably a high-risk person to get a vaccine. And he took it and he's been absolutely fine because for them, it's a lifeline. They either get the vaccine or they cannot leave the house.
Oh, exactly. So, if I was in their situation, I'd do the same.
And so we don't look at the vaccine as being something that's going to set you back. This is what's going to allow us to go back to Bali and buy Bintang t-shirts because yes. They must be a bit threadbare by now, I reckon.
Absolutely. Mm. 2-for-1 cocktails on a Tuesday and those morning.
Dr. Beats headphones that you bought for $5. I mean, they'll be knackered by now. So we need to go back to Bali for all that sort of stuff. And the only way we're going to ever travel and see the world is if we all have common sense and vaccinate. So.
Well, I did a stupid thing because when we had our first lockdown early last year and Tinder said, oh, you can swipe worldwide, and I was bored as shit. So I was really bored, sorry. So bored. So I started swiping and then I met this person online in Canada and we've been talking ever since and we're just like, so are we ever going to meet or is this just a weird online romance?
That's kind of cute, though, isn't it?
Canadians are nice, aren't they? Oh, they're all gorgeous. Kind and lovely.
Yeah.
I've got to say that's like a real aversion to a real relationship, but... Because, you know, he can chat to them, hey, but you're right, enough. When are you going to meet?
You never need to see their dirty underpants or wash or load the dishwasher wars. Honestly, a Tinder date that you never meet sounds ideal to me, unfortunately.
You can turn off the phone.
Do you know what I mean? I was thinking of setting up a false Facebook page, you know, like just maybe I'd be attractive, maybe I'd be 25, maybe I'd have nice perky bosoms and I think they call that catfishing. I'm not allowed to do that, am I? No.
Catfishing.
Yeah. But it'd be nice though, wouldn't it? Just for that
fantasy. It's not an original thought.
Someone else has beat me to it. But
oh, Jill, if you ever want to see what goes on with catfishing, I swear, we could show you. Like it happens all the time.
You should see my Instagram.
Do you know what though? It's fear of missing out because when you're happily married with children and you live in a different reality, which is that you don't. You have, I mean, you can't join Tinder and look just for entertainment. Yeah. I mean, no husband's going to wear that, are they? Yeah. You know?
You could become a polyamorous married couple.
Polyamorous? Well, I'd need to be amorous in the first place. I'm not doing multiple amorous. I mean, honestly, if I crack a smile once a week to my husband, he thinks he's hit the lottery, you know? You got treat him mean, keep him keen.
Do you know, it's funny, I'm going to focus on this dating for a second. Dating during COVID, I'm a real people person. So I went into this freak out mode and got back onto online dating myself, which was crazy because I hate online dating so much. It's like Tetris to me. Like you just
– it's horrendous.
Using your finger. It's terrible, right?
It's horrendous, yeah.
But I did similar. I think I started talking to people in Paris because I love Paris. I was like, well, you know, may as well just
– bomb you.
Know?
Yeah. Have you got a nice apartment?
Coming over to see you sometime. Yeah, no. Yeah. But I get really bored with it. I don't know about you guys. I get so bored with messaging people that – may not even be real. And then I kind of go, I need real connection with real people.
So. I think it's definitely not a substitute for human connection. Mm. I think that's definitely something I've learned.
I don't know. Yeah. Sounds bloody lovely to me.
the Tinder Bumble trail is kind of, it's a repeat cycle. You download it, you're like, oh yeah, I've met this person. And then like 2 days later, you're like, I'm not talking to that person no more.
It's like Chinese food. It's seriously like Chinese food. You go and you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to get the honey chicken. And then you eat it and you're like, it wasn't as great as I imagined it to be every time. And then you delete it, re-download it next month and we're back again.
David, can I just ask, is the Tinder Bumble train on the Biblimum track?
No, but
that's a native name.
is that?
Stop that! No, it's such a bad way to live, because I actually I met my ex who lives in London on Bumble, and well, it's so scary. It's like you've swiped, you've talked, and then you meet up, and you're just like, oh my goodness, you're waiting at the Oxford station, and you're like, oh my goodness, this person could be like a dude, and you're like, oh my god, please don't be. It was okay. She was just taller than me. And I was just like, okay, I can deal with this. And we're together for a year and a bit. But yeah, long distance, COVID-19. And yeah, long distance. And we just decided to end it.
Trapped in the same space. How romantic.
Yeah, no, but you do find some nice people on Tinder.
I've
and
had
Bumble.
Some amazing experiences. Mm. Yeah.
No, I bet wow. you have. Yeah.
Huh?
I bet you have.
What does that mean?
No, you do meet some interesting characters online.
Do you know what the difference between when I was younger, when I was single and used to meet people in other scenarios where, you know, the internet wasn't a thing?
How did you do it?
At the bar.
Not just bars, but like any opportunity. If you saw someone, you had to do it virtually, I suppose, speed dating before speed dating was a thing. So if you'd meet someone in any walks of life that you kind of half fancied, you had to sort of cram in as many leading questions as possible. So you kind of did like your Tinder profile while standing in the shop in the queue at the patisserie. You know, I met this really beautiful French man.
Oh, and what, Tesco?
No, in France, darling.
I'm jealous.
and he was the most handsome thing I've ever seen in my life. And we had this... he didn't speak much French, I didn't speak much English, and we had that sort of like sort of Tinder-esque sort of swipe right, sort of left. And he was lovely, and we went on a date, and he had the worst breath.
Oh.
Do you know what? It was. No. Do you know what? I couldn't get past it, because he was gorgeous, and he was tall, and he was a snowboard instructor, and I fancied him senseless, but he had that stinky halitosis. You can't get past that.
No, you can't. You really can't.
Because you just, like, where's that coming from?
You should have just given him some Listerine and then pecked him.
No.
just a cheeky just shot. Just one shot of Listerine and then in.
Yeah, I don't kiss. Yeah.
No, I don't kiss. Yeah, but you know.
Just do the French one, like. Double cheek.
Oh yeah, but we did. We used to meet people in social occasions and actually have conversations face to face. I know. Can you imagine?
Do you know? I was also saying about COVID. In this era, we've been so lucky because of technology, right? Back when Jill and I were younger, there wasn't that sort of technology. I used to be on the CB radio, so it was great conversation on there.
I love CB. Baker 10 night.
So
you
great.
Used to all pretend to be American. You always put on accents.
I didn't know.
Oh, Jill.
Just talk all night. But, you know, in the dating scene, one of the things I actually do encourage people now, because we do some dating with our business as well, I love eye flirting. And I reckon if you go out, and people don't do it anymore, and when you start to do it, it's so much fun. And I'm going to encourage you to give it a go. You just start eyeballing someone who you think's all right, and the eye flirting thing is great. And then you come up and chat.
I can't even make eye contact with my friends.
Okay, maybe we need to go out, Gemma. I'll teach you.
Yes,
sorry, this is Gemma who was trying to persuade me to become polyamorous. Right? You can't even look someone in the eye. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, keep your dating advice to yourself. Yeah. I can look my butcher
it's
in the eye.
It's actually fun. I'm not kidding. It is a lot of fun.
Need to teach me a few things.
I grew up in Mary Booker, so if I start eye flirting with somebody, I'm generally going to cop a right hook. Like, yeah, like, what are you looking at, mate? And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just eye flirting.
Yeah, he gets beat up and it's your
yeah, Mary Booker bus station is not the best place to be doing eye flirting.
No, you got
to
vibe it, all right? It's got to be the right vibe, right
yeah,
person.
Just vibe it. I'll try that.
Do you think eye flirting will have become more prevalent because of all the mask wearing? We've only got
yes. Oh my goodness.
On the button every time. But do you know what? The thing about people in Western Australia wearing their masks, I noticed that for some people, wearing a mask seemed to be give them carte blanche to let everything else go. We can see the rest of you, mate. You can brush your hair or put on a bit of mascara. I mean, I'm just saying, if we've only got the eyes, make an effort, kill one of them. A bit of makeup wouldn't kill it. I saw people that looked like they'd lived in a cave for 3 weeks and they put a mask on and thinks that hides the rest of it. Honestly, I can still see your fungal toenail infection from here. No amount of masks covering that.
Yeah, you need to put on real shoes, not
you
just, Birks.
You know what? And if your toes are cliff-hanging over that, you know, you just sort it out.
You said that and I'm thinking, you know, let everything go. I'm thinking, what are they, farting? What are they
sadly, doing? Sadly, everyone listening is going to be thinking of that one person. There's that, everyone's thinking of that one, that one.
We all know. Honestly, I go down the shops and see everyone with masks. Some people got it together. They'd sorted their hair. You know, they'd maybe done their makeup. They'd dressed up. They're still like keeping some integrity. And some people are like, I've got a mask on. I can be a wild man now. And, you know, you just think, what is that? I just have standards.
Absolutely.
You know, first world issues, a lot of women actually said to me, one of the things, because a lot of women put lippy on and they couldn't do that with masks. For me, it was my earrings. I have studs. I had to change them all to sleepers and stuff. It really is a first world issue. But so.
Well, I'm a jeweller and I had a lot of my customers came into my shop. The Tasty Pear in Bassendean.
Plug it.
It's a good shop, by the way.
It's a great shop. And because I make a lot of earrings, I had a lot of customers come in who'd lost the casualty of COVID earring loss. So actually I ended up made 6 different single earrings to match. So there you go.
Yeah, my studs were my biggest problem. My mask kept clipping on them. Yeah. I'd lose the back. It was really annoying.
So this is really first world problem.
It was a first world problem, I know, but it was a problem for me.
Yeah, us dudes don't have that kind of problem. It's just a bad breath.
You've lost your French accent.
My French accent is not good. Yeah.
All right, I've got a question for you all. 2 questions, actually. I have heard from Jill before, but I'm happy for you to re-go into this. What drew you to comedy? So, David, do you want to start?
Oh, gosh, this is such an interesting one. I'm quite new to the game here in Perth, and I'm good friends with Miss Samia, and I met Miss Samia when I was on my university prac. I'm a primary school teacher and I was in the class next to her, and we got along quite well, we were bantering and stuff like that. And she was like, I'm actually a comedian. You should come and see my fringe show when you're free. And so I came back from holidays, saw a fringe show, and her and Joe White were doing their fringe at the girls' school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one day, and it was Joe's birthday, and we had gone to the Record Bite to have a drink after to celebrate. And they just approached me and they said, Matt, you're quite funny. And I was like, oh, really? They're like, yeah, Miss Samia has kind of said, like, you, like, just one-off jokes, you're quite personable, you're quite funny, you should do stand-up. And I was like, oh, no, never considered it. I do TikTok and stuff like that. But I just would never imagine getting up on stage and performing in front of people. It's just not my thing. And so they're like, you definitely have to try it once. You can write a set. We'll have a look at it, see if there's any punchlines. And so I worked with Joe and Samia I wrote my first set in a couple of days and I got it checked by them. And they were just like, wow, this is really amazing. We're not actually going to touch it. We just want you to perform it. And I was like, no, this is too scary. And so I got up and I did my first gig, and it's, they say it's like adrenaline and you get addicted and like
heroin.
Adrenaline, because we're keeping it PG. You get this hit of adrenaline and you want that feeling again. It's like skydivers. You just think, who would skydive? And they just do it to get the thrill, and it's just so exhilarating when you're up there. And it's the good feeling is when you hear people laugh and you just think, there's probably people out here. We've all been there. And you watch a show or you're seeing someone, you've had the worst day and something makes you laugh. And it releases the endorphins in your brain. It just makes you so happy. And for me to be able to do that for somebody else when life is, we're stuck in COVID, I feel like it's just phenomenal. I'm so grateful that Joe and Miss Samia helped me.
Well done
out.
To them. That's awesome.
Yeah, phenomenal. They're great.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing. And Gemma?
I fell into it sort of by accident as well. So I moved to Broome after quite a traumatic series of events in my life. And I guess it was a way of me sharing my story. And I'm quite a humor, like, I guess I'm just a, a dark humour kind of person anyway, as a coping mechanism. And there was an event on in Broome called Crash and Burn, and it was this event that was for amateur comedians, but just it was deliberately set up so you were like really bad. So it felt really approachable for me. And the girl who was running it was like, yeah, you're supposed to be crap. So I just thought, oh, I'll give it a go. And it was just the best feeling to get up there and share my story. And I had a lot of people come up afterward and say, look, I could really relate to that, or I've been through that too. And it, I think it was just a way for me to feel like my story mattered and that other people could relate to it. And I guess for me, my comedy is always centered around, well, what's the message I'm trying to send, or what's this a part of that's a bigger narrative? So, you know, that's always something on my mind when I write my sets. And yeah, I've been finding that I'm just addicted to. Like, I just cannot stop writing things. Everything's like, oh yeah, I'm going to put that in a bit, you know. And I think I've definitely found my art, because last week I went to this stand-up night and it was like a mixed multimedia night, and there was like spoken word poetry. My God, that was depressing. So I think I've definitely found my art form.
Absolutely.
And you?
My reasons are, if my mum and dad had let me do drama and ballet when I was a child, I wouldn't need to do this now. Instead of which, they gave me Scottish country dancing. And quite honestly, unless you're auditioning for Braveheart, what's the point?
Oh, my goodness. Or Trainspotting.
I was always a dramatic child, and I've always been creative. I've made my life in the creative arts. But whole living has been that. So I didn't have an issue with creative outlets, but I never managed to fulfil my dramatic nature. So I've always been a horrible show-off, and I've always been loud and inappropriate. And in real life, that can be a bit tiresome for everyone. And, you know, in normal circles, I've always just been extra. I've been like super extra. I've been like extra times a million, you know, like I just never have said the right things at the right time, because I've always been looking for a laugh. So I'm always saying the stupid thing that'll make, like in school, I was always that child, you know, like Gillian's a bit of a show-off. Gillian's a bit of a chatterbox. Gillian should concentrate more on her schoolwork and not trying to make everyone in the class laugh. Yeah, well, who's sorry now? Yeah, 54, now I'm kicking it. I've always, and nobody listens to a word I say. So when you're on stage, that you've got a captive audience, so people have to listen to you. And you can pretend you've got friends when you're a comedian. You can pretend that they all like you when actually they're not friends. They're paid to get a laugh. So for me, it's a bit of desperation. it's a bit of desperation for acknowledgement or understanding. And to be honest, my extraness, it works fine for me. And when you get middle age, you do get overlooked a wee bit in society, especially as a woman. You become a wee bit invisible. You know, I always reckoned I'd be a great spy or great shoplifter, because nobody ever looks at you. It's like you go past your sell-by date and nobody gives a monkey's. So the nice thing about being on stage and saying, you know what, we're perfectly good at a lot of things, you know, and we're meant to slope away into the distance and be ready for death, but I fight back against that. So I'm fighting for my spirit people, which are overlooked people and people who don't feel represented. And that doesn't mean to say that you're middle aged, it just means you don't feel represented in society. So I am in a minority in comedy because there's not many people my age doing it, but we should do it. We should take over. We should kick out all the young people. And
I was agreeing with you up until then.
Yeah, same.
I had David up to that point. No, I'm only kidding. I just think more people out there who've got life stories and got cool stuff to say should give it a try. And I started comedy 2 years ago at the ripe old age of 52, and whether I'm successful or not is by the by. You just need to give it a crack. And so if you're out there and you think you're funny, give it a shot. You know, like, it could change your life. maybe not for the better, but it could change your life. And yeah, comedy's good for everyone, but it's not for everyone.
Yeah, oh my God, absolutely.
I think it is for everyone, but I think maybe not as a comedian. Member. Yeah, audience member.
Yeah, because, come and see a show. There's tons of shows always about.
Oh, so many.
NY do some of the best shows in town, if you ask me. And they're in Kalamunda, and they do shows all over. But we are at the Charles Hotel next week.
26th of May.
And this is going to be a cracker night. And the great thing about this night is not only are you going to get comedy, there's going to be great raffle prizes, there's going to be fabulous entertainment on the night, and you guys get to give a wee bit back. Buy a ticket, buy some raffle tickets, feel good, help out these lovely people in India, and we will save some good jokes for you. David is even going to write one special.
Oh, I hope. Yeah, I'm trying to. It's a long process writing comedy, and that's one thing that I didn't. Well, you don't think about it. You just think, I'm just going to get up on stage and just say funny stuff. But no, it's a planned process. It takes a while to write it.
It's so a lifestyle. Sure does. Yeah.
It is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Sorry, I will add into that with the Wednesday the 26th of May at the Charles Hotel. We're supporting CIRA International, and $5 from ticket sales are going towards that. There will be scan codes if people want to do extra. And basically, that is the organisation that Mark McGowan, our famous premier, which I think around the world probably know. Woohoo, yeah. He actually recommended, so that's why we're supporting that organisation over anyone else. We know that it would be reputable. So we're all getting behind that. I have another comedy question for you guys. You've started the line of writing, so why don't we go there? What is your creative processes like? And David, do you want to start with that one?
My comedy process is like, all my jokes are about me and my life. I'm a bit ditzy and not quite world smart, but I've had some pretty wild experiences. My favorite one was, I say in one of my sets, but it's when I discovered that Caucasian people aren't from Caucasia. And a lot of people think that's funny, but I genuinely thought that Caucasia was a place. And I genuinely found that quite funny. And so I thought, okay, I need to take this story and take it to the stage and see if people like it. And so you need to find funny things in your life. You need to find the creative process. You need to find just comedy every day.
I love that either your teachers or your parents failed you. So
both probably. But I do comedy which I like.
Yeah.
And that's just finding people's funny stories.
Yeah. I'm laughing because my mum used to always call indicators flickers. And so when I was driving, I thought it was a flicker. And when the instructor said to me, turn your indicator, and I was like, what the hell is an indicator? So I've been there, I get it.
Yeah.
Mum fail for me. So
I think flicker means different things.
Does it? Sure. What does it mean?
I think it's a clean show, isn't it?
Oh,
you're going to have to tell me after.
Oh. See, another moment.
I know, right? Wow.
Well, I'm still really getting up to you.
I thought Wakanda was a real country as well. I'm like, isn't it lovely they got real Wakandans in the movie?
Oh, my goodness. No, but people find that funny. Genuine stories about dumbness. Like, that's just me. Me just absolutely experiencing life to the fullest, but then not understanding things.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's always miscommunications with me.
Love it.
Gemma, what about yourself?
I think the thing I'm realizing is that, I try and be aware of some of the like themes that are going on in society, and that's very important. But I think if you try to be funny, or you try to create jokes that you think people are going to find funny, that can lead you down a track where you're not being authentic or genuine. I think I'm the same. Like, I'm a very autobiographical kind of comedian, so I just tend to write things at 3 o'clock in the morning that I think of in my brain. It might be a really funny date I went on. It's often my themes are around religion and being single at 30. So those are kind of the themes I work around, because I was I was in like a cold for quite a while. So I tend to try and write things that are unique to my story that I think people would find interesting, and work around that. So I tend to word vomit, and then I will pick a few people in my life to run that kind of joke by. So I'm doing a lot of video blogging with people on Instagram being like, hey, I've got this joke. What do you think? People in comedy as well, but also just like my friends, because those are the people that are in the audience. And just try a few jokes out on an open mic. So I tend to use like two jokes that I know I've used before that work, and then I'll insert in the middle a new joke and see how it lands, and it either goes really well or really bad.
Trial and error, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And really it's having fun with it. I think that's what I've learned in the past month is like, don't try and be someone that you're not or be funny. Just be up there, be yourself. If it doesn't work, it's not the end of the world.
And if you try it, guys, just know that you get up there and there'll be a joke that people don't laugh at and that you thought was super funny.
Yes.
Don't worry, you can try it somewhere else or you can get rid of it. Jokes don't, like, you don't have to keep them forever. Find a good set, but you don't feel like you have to always try these new ones, because sometimes they won't work, and don't feel bad about it because it's happened to everybody.
Yeah, it totally depends.
I think it's really good what you just said as well, Gemma, having that different, diverse scope of life and having those interestings, and like you both have played that in. So, yeah, it's David and Gemma, sorry. I'm the gesturing and it doesn't work on radio. So.
Staring at the wall.
Yeah, but it's really, even the cult thing, I think the audience would be interested in that because it's something that not everyone's familiar with. So,
yeah.
No, it's very good. And what about you, Jill?
I'm a prolific writer. I love to write, and I just write about everything. I write essays on things that annoy me, which is running into page. I think I'm on book number 17 now of stuff that annoys me. One day, I worried the other day that I had this horrible dream that I woke up that I had died and the kids found my books, my comedy books, and started reading the unfiltered stuff. And I just thought, oh no. Right, because I write everything. So if my husband annoys me every day, I go and I write down what annoys me and I expand it to the nth degree. So there's pages and pages and pages on things my husband does to annoy me, just even down from breathing. That I actually wrote an entire page on things that annoyed me about my husband's breathing, and then I wrote it and I just thought, this is so horrible and vile. And then, but then I just turned the page, which is what you do, and I just worried. I had this very lucid dream. So I write about everything and nothing, and then I go back and look at some of them and I pick bits out. I don't run things past people so much anymore, because after you've been doing it a wee while, like, nobody wants to listen to it. You just need to figure it out yourself whether it is or isn't funny. And also you have to be invested, I think, in what you, as Gemma said, think is funny and is your own self and your own worth and your own voice. And it doesn't matter if it's maybe what other people necessarily want to hear. I mean, I can go on stage and talk about bras and pants for quite a long time and the men in the room will laugh at that, because most men live with women unless you're gay, you know, but we all understand what bras and pants are about. They're universal commonalities, and so I tend to stick to things that you can do in any country on earth. And I mean, I've performed online in America and I've done my very Scottish, very women-centric knickers and pants and silly mono boobs, you know, and like I do that and people laugh at that in other countries where there's no context. So as long as you have commonalities, you can take out the local specific stuff and it'll work anywhere. I've been doing a lot of comedy on Clubhouse, which is a sort of global phenomenon but really huge in America, and it's a bit like CB radio you were talking about earlier, where you have live rooms where people chat, and I've done a lot of comedy over there, and I have a voice in the other side of the world, which is bizarre. And that's COVID that's kind of brought that to the fore, that people have been in these positions where we're being forced to take on different technological spins on this. So there's different ways of being involved in comedy. It doesn't just involve stand-up. You can do, as David said, TikTok. I love Clubhouse. And there's lots of other different ways. So just, you know, the internet's a great resource for these things. And watch what some of the greats have done. I met Jeff Foxworthy in Clubhouse the other day there, and he's the highest grossing comedian of all time. He did the You Know You're a Redneck When series of things, which was massive. And he made albums, which is when you could buy vinyl. Wow. Of people doing comedy. Mm. And that's how he became huge. And he's, so you can meet people at that online and practice and do different stuff. There's a voice for everybody out there, but be authentic. That's what I think.
You know, you mentioned your husband's breathing, right? And I'm bringing it up because I had an epiphany the other night. I'm laying in bed and I was listening to my own breathing and it was annoying me. And so I realised why I'm single.
Oh no, it's a real thing. Like,
it is.
One's chewing.
Is it?
When people are chewing, I don't know why, it's just in my ear and it's just one of those things that I can't handle. Like, someone will come down, sit next to me like a food court, and I have to like get up and move because it's making me, like, gives me the shivers. It's weird.
Yeah. My husband eats nuts really loud and his head's hollow.
Yeah, you can hear it.
And it echoes and it just makes me insane. I was watching Handmaid's Tale and he's sitting crunching macadamia nuts, and honestly, I could have smothered him there and then. And I don't think I'd go to jail for it because the noise of it was, and I thought, do I make that noise? So then I went into the kitchen, I got the macadamia nuts, I said, right, this is when you know you've lost the plot. And I get my phone and I put it on voice memo. And I crunched the macadamia nuts and recorded it and played it back, and I was upset. Right, mine wasn't as loud. So yeah, stuff like, you just need to pick away at it. It's like comedy is picking at a scab. One scab that annoys you, and you just pick away at it. And that's a disgusting analogy.
I know, that's the worst analogy ever.
I think we need to normalise having homicidal thoughts about our partners. The more I talk to people, like when I was married, it was the snoring issue, he would snore so loudly to the point, and I put up with it for 4 years. And at the 4 year mark, I was like Googling hitmen, you know what I mean? Like, it's not.
If your search history, if your search history was ever taken in a court of law, we'd all be in jail, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. Oh, we absolutely would.
The feds would be there.
Oh, Gemma, my ex husband was a snorer. He ended up having sleep apnea. So, but it was full on. Yeah, I feel for you.
It's so debilitating because then you're tired.
Yeah.
And so then the next night, it's like, you start getting the eye twitch and then you reach for the pillow. It's not good.
I used to slap in my sleep, like stop and then push. I'm gesturing again so no one can see. So.
Yeah. You've got to do the kick though. Yeah, yeah. It's the, like, you roll over, you flick your leg out and you absolutely whack him and then pretend you're asleep.
Oh, I didn't even pretend. I didn't get to that stage. I was over it. I was like,
no. You were really in for it. WWE style.
Yeah, yeah. Like, just stop snoring. Move over. Sleep on your side.
The couch is outside.
I'm leaving you.
All right, I have another question relating to comedy. I'd like your opinions on what is the difference, because the audience doesn't always understand this, what is the difference between a pro room and an open mic room? So, Jill, do you want to start this one?
A pro room basically is where you're getting paid and people will do a prescribed set that has been witnessed a few times, so the bookers will book a comedian based on that particular set. So you stick to that one. It's not as improvisational. You know what you get, and it will be of a certain quality. They will perform to a certain standard and they will get paid. Open mic rooms, you will get pro comedians still in these rooms, but it can be very experimental, and it should be an opportunity for people to let loose. Younger, I don't mean younger, I mean younger in comedy world, so less experienced comedians can try stuff out. Experienced comedians can try stuff out, but it's a much looser vibe, so you're going to get something. Sometimes you get something super fresh and great, but like a pro show, you know when you go to a pro show that these are tried and tested comedians who will perform to a certain standard. But also from a comedian's point of view, the difference between the pro room and the mic is you're getting paid, so you have to perform to a certain standard. So you're not going to try new stuff. You're not going to take as big risks, perhaps. And that's what I would say.
I think that really covers it. Thank you.
Sorry.
All right. I've got random questions for you guys. Are you ready for this?
So ready.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what is a ridiculous thing that someone has tricked you into doing or believing?
Moving to Australia.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I'm kidding. No, when I find my passport where he's hidden it, I'll be off. No, that was 15 years ago. No, I'm only kidding. You can trick me. No. That's not a thing. I need to think about that. David's got one, I can see.
No, I'm not very gullible, but I am. Yeah, but I don't think that people trick me into doing stuff. I feel like people will say something and I mishear them and then I think that they've said something. Like, it got mixed up between I was talking to my New Zealand friend the other day and she was talking, I shaved my beard and I was sitting on my bed and so she goes, oh, look, you've just done something with your beard. And I was like, oh, you mean my bed? I was like, oh, yeah, it's the same bed as before. She goes, no, your beard. And I was like, oh. I was like, what's going on here? And I was just like, do you mean my beard? And she goes, yes, your beard. And everyone was laughing. But then I was completely confused. And it's moments like that that I'm probably gullible or
comprehension
just
issues.
I'm not a primary school teacher. I should understand stuff like this.
You're teaching 5-year-olds.
I know, guys. Don't ever hire me. No, but I'm not as much gullible or leading. It's more me mishearing stuff.
Mm.
I'm a very extreme person and I'm getting tricked into joining cults all the time. So the biggest one was, got tricked into this cult. What got there is this big, like, sort of auditorium thing and I was, like, really mentally unwell. So I was like, well, obviously I need Jesus. Like, that's the only thing that's going to fix me at this point. And I walked in there and there was, like, a band and there was a fog machine and there was this, like, cool singer up there.
Sounds
and
all right.
They're like, hell song. Jesus has a plan for your life. He's going to make it all better. And I fully got tricked into it for 10 years.
That's nuts. That's a long-term trickery.
It's That's me. They're like, I'll join CrossFit. And I'm like, CrossFit's the way.
I just thought of one. Now, it's going back now a bit, guys, but this will give you context. It was in 1984. Stay with it. It was in Glastonbury. I met a girl called Linda, and the last words I remember were, come into this tent, they've got some really good space cake, right? And it was £1. It was £1.75, and I remember that. Why do I remember that fact? £1.75, and we got it, and it was in the hippie. There was a hippie tent in Glastonbury and we went into it and she said it was meant to be really good and I remember tasting it and thinking, that's just sponge cake, there's nothing in it. Oh. 3 days later, I woke up in the chill out room watching Blade Runner in completely different clothes with no wallet, no money and I think I had a great time and I ended up, I had to hitchhike back from Glastonbury to Edinburgh. This is no word of a lie.
Oh my goodness.
And I had, do you know what, I had that suede jacket for like about 10 years afterwards. I loved it. So the last words that I heard were, you should try this space cake. It's great. So don't do drugs. They're bad.
That's wild.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's the last time I was tricked. I learnt my lesson.
You're tricked, but you walked in and you remember how much it cost.
Do you know what? Blade Runner, every time I see Blade Runner, I just think, triggered. Because I woke up on my side and I woke up and there's all these people like just like passed out watching Blade Runner. And you know that you do that thing where you look up at the ceiling and like you have no idea where you are. And I'm looking at the ceiling going, oh, it's a tent. Why am I in a tent? I looked around, there's like all these comatose people just wasted, right? And I looked down and I'm like, what's happened? You know, why am I in different clothes? I never met those people again. That girl Linda, I have no idea who she
maybe it's
was.
For the best.
Well, do you know what? There was one of the guys I went to Glastonbury with, Willie. This is a true story. He went and I was young. I was 17 at the time. You know, cut me some slack. But anyway, Willie went off and he came back and he says, oh, I've found these micro dots, which is acid, LSD. And he said they're rain damaged, right? They're water damaged, so they don't know the potency. So they were a bargain. And we all looked at him, we're like, Willie, you're mental. You've been ripped off. That is just rubbish. But we're Scottish, so we like a bargain. And then he necked them all because we were laughing at him. We never saw Willie again. And so he just went off and we never saw him again. And so he lived in our flat in Edinburgh And about 6 months later, we got a knock on the door and it was his mum and dad looking for him. And they're like, have you seen Willie? And we're like, no. And they went, and he just disappeared. Oh, and I always wonder about that. You know, like when you think back to things that have happened in your past and you think, oh my God, what happened to Willie?
There's like a new book out. Did you say it? Where's Willie?
Where's Willie? Yeah. You could just draw Glastonbury and all there'd be different tents and bands and everything. Happy days, happy days. Yeah.
The UK is definitely a different world to here. Just a little bit. Especially Scotland.
What do you mean? Glastonbury's in England?
Yeah,
it's next to Stonehenge.
I know. But I'm saying, I mean, the UK as a whole, there's different sections, but Scotland's pretty hardcore, yeah. I must say.
Once we dig the moat, we'll be happy. We'll get our wee Scottish passports. Hey, and take our freedom. That's the last time I can genuinely say I think I was tricked, but I've probably been a bit more sensitive. Like, I think, you know, they're all just taking drugs willy nilly. You don't want to do that.
Well, Willie definitely did, didn't he?
Yeah, Willie went for a walk. If you're out there, Willie, and you're listening to this now, please get in touch. Hit me up in my DMs. I want to know what happened to Willie. Where's Willie?
I want to know what happened to Willie. I'm interested in
yeah,
his story.
Yeah, we should definitely go.
We should investigate that. Yeah. But I've always felt a wee bit guilty, not because I was complicit in any of it. It's just because as an adult now, thinking about you being the parent going hunting for your child, you know, it's like, oh my God. But also, like, I look at my kids who are like at early teens and I just think, oh, he was a terrible, terrible child, you know, like as a young, you know, like 17, I was hitchhiking back. You know, you think about that, think, I don't want my kids doing that. Don't be like me.
No.
I hope they're not listening to this.
Just don't let them. You're their mum.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do as I do.
It's interesting that you said that. I went to visit one of my friends in a drug rehabilitation centre when I think I was 18. She was about 17. And you're speaking about Willie. Reminds me of a girl that I met in there. She had been to a rave and got caught in a trip and every day dressed like she was going to a rave. Her name was Sparkles. And she had glitter and everything. But I wonder if Willie ended up in the same sort of situation.
Willie and Sparkles have naffed off together.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He's got sparkly Willie.
Oh my goodness.
She's turned bright red, everyone.
I know. She can't breathe.
Sparkly Willie.
Okay.
Right. But it made me laugh. If I can make myself laugh once a day and have tears in my eyes, I feel my work here is done, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's what comedy does do to you. It makes you think of ludicrous things to the nth degree. Because this conversation went in a huge spiral, didn't it?
It did, you know. Yeah, yeah.
And we got from sparkles to wit. Yeah. Willie and Sparkles, if you're out there.
What is one of your pet peeves?
Oh, that's a big list, Vaughn.
You're only allowed one.
Oh, man. All right. My pet peeve? Oh, no, I can't. Come back to me.
Mine's
I
said it before, chewing too loud. People are just, I work at a cafe restaurant, and there are people who order big meals and then they'll sit right in front of my window because I'm the chef and they will sit there and chew with their mouth open. And
That's disgusting.
It just makes me feel physically ill.
You should yeah.
And then
them.
And then you can also, they're that close, you can hear them like chewing. You can hear it getting chewed in the mouth and you're like, oh. So by far, I can hear, like, my mum will be eating crisps in the lounge room and I'll be in my bedroom and I can hear her chewing. It's like a sixth sense. I'm like, I can't handle it. And it's my, by far, biggest pet peeve known to man.
I think you've got some sensory issues.
I definitely do. Yeah. There's actually a word for it. I can't remember what it is.
A chef who doesn't like people chewing.
Chew with your mouth closed.
Yeah, okay. I agree.
Where were they raised? By wolves or something?
Yeah. I hate bare feet in public places. Oh, my goodness. If I see someone in Coles with their manky fungal nail and they're not even getting nice feet, they've got horrible manky toes with hairs and filth and manky toenails and I have to look at them in a place where there's food, that makes me want to vomit in my mouth. Mm.
It's when they've just walked off the street as well, and you can see where they've been. Like, you can see where they've been.
Can I give you an example of monkey toe-ism that makes me just incensed? I'm a jeweler, and I had this tray of really nice silver rings, which I had made, and a woman came in and says, "Is it okay if I try them on?" And I was, yeah. She had tried them on her toes.
Oh, no.
She tried them on her toes. I took the rings home. I melted them down. I refused to even clean them. I took them home, and I melted them in a blob of silver because I had to burn the evil off.
Should have just chucked it out. It wasn't worth it.
I couldn't even touch them. I got a bit of tissue. And it's like, who does that?
You're not
that
ever giving your husband a foot massage, are you?
I would die rather than touch. There you go. I hate feet. See if my husband touches my, like, with, you're on the sofa and the toes prong out and touch you. Mm. Oh, it's near right. Like, no, how does a chiropodist exist? I mean, I don't even know.
The idea of someone sucking your toes?
No.
Oh, my goodness. No.
Some people pay good money to do that.
I know, right?
They pay good money.
You touch anything for a check.
If you're in comedy, you got to make back somehow.
Do you know what? Tom Hardy's toes, I would make an exception. He'd have attractive toes, wouldn't he?
They'd be muscular.
They'd be muscular.
Tom Hardy, please send us a picture of your toes.
Yes. Tom Hardy.
Sure, you can find them.
Tom Hardy, if you're out there with Willie and Sparkles.
Yeah. My pet peeve is, because I was born in England and then I went back a few times and I feel that Australians need to learn the concept of keeping left not as a suggestion. What I mean? Like, you're in the shopping centre, and in England, what I love is that there's so many people, they have to adhere to the keep left rule, otherwise their society would break down. Mm. Whereas we're just like, oh, you know what, I think I'm just going to stop in the middle of the aisle in the shopping centre and have a chat to my friend or check my phone. And it just, like, I'm a pretty zen person, but I avoid malls because people just cannot keep left. It's like, oh, it drives me insane.
It's a serious issue. Anyone who's been to the UK would absolutely know that rule. Yeah. Airports, you will get pushed over. People have, like, walking rage in the UK with keeping left, and it's a rule you have to abide by.
I think we should bring it in.
People touching, people bumping in the back of you. Like, you know, like you're in a queue and they, like, touch the back of your heels and you have to do that. You turn around and go, excuse me. And then instantly you sound like a Victorian Edwardian woman, don't you? Yeah, I mean, all that's missing is the corset and the bustle. Excuse me. I did it in the post office. This person, like, just touched the back of my heels with a trolley and I did that irate, you know, excuse me. And then I looked and I thought, oh, I'm the mental one here. Not them. It's like it's an accident. It's okay. You know, you're allowed to touch people, but no, don't touch my heels. It's feet.
1.5 meters, guys. Keep the social distancing up.
Even for no reason, but just because you annoy me. So we've got feet, we've got keeping left, and
chewing.
Mm-hmm. So don't be in a nut bar with your bare feet on the right-hand side of the queue in Coles. That's
driving in Perth. My pet peeve, Perth drivers. Yeah. I really have a problem with it. Yes. Why can't Perth drivers
roundabouts
merge?
I've just moved to Burswood, and so I have to go on the Graham Farmer Freeway, and oh my goodness, I don't know where, maybe they just live on the freeway, but people cannot drive. They cannot drive, especially through the tunnel.
Holden Rodeo Utes. I tell you.
BMWs?
Have you ever seen that film Christine? It was from the 70s. It was about a demonic car that chased people down. It's an amazing film. Yeah. That is what living in Perth's like, except it's a whole rodeo ute. And you look in your mirror and it's like, oh, you know, and it's like, oh, what am I meant to do? Where am I meant to go? Is it going to clip me? And you can feel the rage, you know.
Do you know, to be fair, I own a Hilux, so it's okay. I have this sense of superiority when I drive around the city in a Hilux. Because, like, this little Suzuki Swift thinks he's going to jump in front of me. I'm like, oh, what are you going to do? Hit me? Like, I'm going to admit it.
See, I lived in Sydney and I will just pull in because people here do not let people in. It drives me nuts. Put your indicator on, you're supposed to let people in.
They don't care.
We've got the space here. We can do it. It's not like it's Sydney. So
we do have lots of space. People seem to take it up though.
Space. The final frontier.
All right. So I would like to know, social media wise, where can people find you guys?
Everywhere, really. I'm on Clubhouse, Jill the Scottish Terrier. I'm on Instagram, Jill the Scottish Terrier. I'm on Facebook, Jill the Scottish Terrier. Jill with a G, G-I-L-L, Terrier, can't spell. Just find me. I'm easy to find. I've lots of social media links. I'm going to do TikTok and David's going to show me how to.
Yeah, and do the run again. She's thinking about the time period, not the dance. Just death staring me now, guys.
Just so as you know, you don't want to poke the bear.
Do you say book the bear or poke the bear?
Book the bear. Pork. You can book me on Crowdpleaser.
You can find me on Instagram, GemFrancis30, same on all faces, and TikTok. If you swipe long enough on Tinder, you'll also find me. No, just kidding. I got banned.
You can find me on TikTok at Horsty, H-O-U-R-S-T, and then on Instagram you can find me at Breed. Breed? Oh, my goodness. Veed Brit IG.
What were you thinking about?
I don't know. You were talking about Tinder.
Breeding, obviously.
It's been a while, guys. But yeah. But you'll also find us on the 26th of May at the Charles Hotel.
Yeah.
We will all be performing.
And Willie and Sparkles will be welcome.
Willie and Sparkles turn up, I will pay for your tickets, guys.
So I'll donate $500
If Willie lived past the 5 microdots of acid, I'll pop.
Sorry, Gemma, did you legitly get banned from?
I did.
I am banned from it twice.
Oh, really? Banned from it twice. How did those get banned?
Well, the thing is with Tinder is that it. I think it's copped so much flack from people sexually harassing people online. So if someone has beef with you, they can report you, and Tinder will just ban you straight away. Oh. So I think I must have left someone on scene, and they've gone, "I hate her," and they can get you banned. And it happened to me twice.
Oh, I got banned because I tried to promote our singles events on there. Oh, I've got a life ban. No. I can't even log into it.
Really?
So it doesn't once you're banned, you're done. It's like a one and done.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to get to one of your singles events. Is there one soon?
Yeah, there is. There's for 37 to 45 year old or 50 year old. Sorry,
I'm 22.
But we're looking at your age group because
that'd be brilliant. Because more people finding love in Perth is horrendous.
You can turn up to
it's like finding a needle in a haystack around here.
Is there one for over 50s who are not single?
Yes. Yeah, 37 to my goodness. That's ChristianSingles.com.
Right. that's when maybe not. But it's get into eye flirting, okay?
Definitely.
That's the takeaway from today's conversation.
Yeah, get away from your phone and start looking at people. Yeah,
I don't understand what you just said.
All right, so we're NY Vents, and basically check out the Charles Hotel. You can see that on our website. Tickets are only $12.50, and $5 of that are going to Sierra International. We have a huge lineup that night, and our MC is David Cullen. So thank you all for joining us today. And I look forward to next Wednesday. And good luck, India, with beating COVID. We really hope you do. But we hope the whole world does. We really want this to get back into a travel state. And
get me to Canada.
And get vaccinated.
Yep.
Yeah.
And donate.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's all beat this together. All right. Take care, guys. And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.